You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 580. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 580. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Become a member of this podcast and get our 8 to 10 page learning guides that we provide for all of our episodes. On this cafe, we're going to talk about one of the great opera singers of the 20th century, a most interesting woman by the name of Marian Anderson. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Marian Anderson was born in February of 1897 in the town of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The city of Philadelphia is located in the eastern part of the United States. Pennsylvania is next to the state of New York. From a very early age, it was clear that young Marian had an amazing voice for singing. She began singing in public when she was just 6 years old with the choir in the church where her family went. A choir, C-H-O-I-R, is an organized group of singers. We often associate the word choir with a church, but you can have a choir sing anywhere, really. When Marian Anderson sang in church, she learned that she had a very unique talent. She was able to sing all of the female parts of the music. As you may know, when we talk about the parts of a song, especially in classical music, such as opera music, we are referring to the bass, tenor, alto, and soprano parts. Those parts are ranges, really, of musical notes that can be sung. For men, we usually classify their voices as either being bass, which is a very low voice, or tenor, which is a somewhat higher voice. For women, typically, we talk about the alto and the soprano being the highest voice. Well, Marian Anderson was able to sing both alto and soprano, and do it very well. When she was 19, the members of the church decided they wanted to get some money together to send Marian Anderson to study singing because she had such an amazing voice. Anderson did not come from a rich family. As African Americans living in Philadelphia, her mother, although she trained to be a teacher, was unable to get a job as a black woman. Her father worked in various jobs but never had a lot of money, and sadly, he died when Marian was only 12 years old after having had an accident. He was only 39 years old when he died. So the Andersons didn't have a lot of money, certainly not enough to send their daughter to any sort of school or college. But the church got together and managed to collect enough money to send her to study with a very well-known teacher of singing by the name of Giuseppe Boghetti. Anderson actually tried to go to a music school in Philadelphia, but she was turned down. That is, she was refused admission because she was black. The school only allowed white singers to study there. In order to study with this famous music teacher, this teacher of singing, Giuseppe Boghetti, Anderson had to audition. That is, she had to sing a song for him. She sang a popular African-American spiritual, what we once called Negro spirituals. These were religious songs that were popular in the black community that had been sung in churches for many years here in the United States. The song that she sang was called Deep River, and it was about the idea of getting to the promised land, to heaven, to a place of freedom. This is a little bit of that song, so you get an idea about the quality and the incredible power of Marian Anderson's voice. Let's listen to just the first minute of that recording. It is said that when Boghetti heard Marian Anderson sing that song, he cried because her voice was so beautiful. He decided, in fact, to give her lessons for free, not to get any money from her or her church, so that she could develop her wonderful gift. After Anderson finished her training, she entered a contest, a competition, in order to find one of the best singers. The prize, what you got if you won the competition, was a chance to sing with the greatest orchestra in the United States at that time, the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. Philharmonic, P-H-I-L-H. A-R-M-O-N-I-C, refers to a symphony orchestra, a large group of musicians who play classical music together, especially symphonies, which require a large number of musicians. Anderson performed with the New York Philharmonic in 1925, when she was herself in her late 20s. After that, she became more famous. She continued her studies with music teachers, but also went around the United States giving concerts, singing. Although in many places she was not allowed to sing because they didn't allow blacks into certain concert halls or places where people sing. Of course, during this period, especially before the 1950s. In many parts of the United States, there was the official policy of segregation, S-E-G-R-E-G-A-T-I-O-N. Segregation is separating people based on some characteristic, in this case, based on the color of their skin. So her tour, or the travels that she went on in order to perform, were not as successful as they could have been because of the segregation. In the 1930s, she decided to leave the United States and go to Europe to sing, as well as to study. She had received a scholarship to study in Europe. A scholarship, S-C-H-O-L-A-R-S-H-I-P, is an amount of money that is given to you to support your education. Miriam Anderson received a scholarship to study music in Europe. While in Europe, she made friends with some of the great composers and conductors of that time. A composer is someone who writes music. A conductor is someone who leads an orchestra or group of musicians. She became friends especially with John Sibelius, the Finnish composer, and was quite popular in many Scandinavian cities. She performed concerts throughout Europe, and because there was not the same discrimination against blacks there, she was able to perform much more widely and became very popular. In fact, the great Italian conductor Toscanini said she had a voice that one only hears every 100 years. That's how great her voice was. She returned to the United States more popular than ever and began to give more concerts here in the U.S. She became friends with, among others, Albert Einstein, the great scientist, and spent time at Einstein's home when he was working at Princeton University. The most important and famous moment of her career, however, was in 1939. In 1939, Marian Anderson wanted to give a concert in Washington, D.C., and specifically in a building that was owned by an organization called the Daughters of the American Revolution, or DAR. The DAR was one of the oldest organizations of women. It specifically, as the name implies, was an organization for those who were descendants of Americans who had been in this country since the Revolutionary War, since the late 18th century. So it was a very traditional organization, but also an organization that didn't want to change very much. And one of the changes that the DAR didn't like was having African Americans integrated into society, given the same rights as white Americans. So the DAR said, no, you cannot sing at our famous building called Constitution Hall, which is still located there in Washington, D.C. One of the members of the Daughters of the American Revolution was the wife of the President of the United States, Eleanor Roosevelt. Roosevelt was so angry that the DAR had refused, had said no to Marian Anderson because she was black, that she resigned. She quit the organization. And together with the then Secretary of the Interior, she arranged for a concert where in Washington, D.C., not in a building, but in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Now, if you've seen photographs of Washington, D.C., or have been to our country's capital, you'll know that in front of our Capitol building, there is a long area of mostly grass, what's called the Mall. And at the opposite end of where our Capitol building is, there is a memorial, a building that honors Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln, of course, was the president during our Civil War, which helped end slavery in the United States. In April of 1939, there was a concert at which Marian Anderson was asked to perform. She sang several songs, including a very patriotic song. Patriotic, P-A-T-R-I-O-T-I-C, refers to love of your country. A patriotic song is a song about your country showing how much you love it. This song was called My Country, Tis of Thee, and it was a patriotic song that Marian Anderson sang, showing that she too, of course, was an American and proud to be an American. Of course, Eleanor Roosevelt and others wanted to draw attention to the fact that Anderson was singing as an African American at the Lincoln Memorial. To draw attention to means to make people notice, to make people understand that she was a great American as well as a great singer. Here's a 1 minute recording of that actual performance. Let's listen to Marian sing. My country, tis of thee, that is, I'm talking to you, sweet land of liberty, of freedom, of thee, of you, I sing. That's what Marian Anderson sang, and her performance was heard by millions of Americans across the country. Later that year, Anderson was invited to the White House to sing for the King and Queen of England. She was the first African American to be invited to the White House to perform, to sing. Anderson continued to sing and perform for many years after that famous 1939 performance. She had many other accomplishments, many other things that she had done. She became the first African American to sing at the New York Metropolitan Opera. She was asked by the President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower, to sing at his second inauguration ceremony when he continued as president in 1957. Eisenhower also made her what was called a goodwill ambassador. A goodwill, G-O-O-D-W-I-L-L, ambassador is someone who promotes the image or certain ideas about a country. She traveled around Asia and in India giving concerts. Eisenhower also made her a U.S. representative to the United Nations Human Rights Committee. She sang again at John F. Kennedy's inauguration ceremony in 1961. She received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the organization that gives out the awards for the best music every year, what is called the Grammys. In 1963, she was given an award called the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest award that the United States government gives a non-military citizen. All during this time, she continued to perform at concerts and in operas. In 1965, she decided to retire, to end her singing career, and she did it at the most famous concert hall in the United States, Carnegie Hall in New York City. By the way, she began her farewell or final tour in 1964 at Constitution Hall, the place where she was not allowed to sing in 1939. Anderson married in the early 1940s, and she and her husband lived in Connecticut. He died in 1986 after 43 years of marriage. She continued to live a quiet life at her home in Connecticut. Later, she moved to Portland, Oregon to live with her nephew. She died in 1993 at the age of 96. I remember when she died, there were all sorts of stories in the newspapers about her and her famous performance in 1939. She truly was one of the great American singers and one of the great Americans of her generation. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, in Taiwan. Duncan wants to know the meanings of three expressions, in a heartbeat, in a second, and in a moment. All three of these are related and have to do with time. Let's start with in a heartbeat. H-E-A-R-T-B-E-A-T. The word heartbeat refers, of course, to your heart, that part of your body that moves blood throughout the body. A heartbeat is when the heart muscle contracts and expands, that is, it pumps blood. One heartbeat takes very little time. Your heart beats on average, I think, 80 times a minute. So one heartbeat is less than a second long. You can see then that the expression in a heartbeat means very quickly, without any delay, without any waiting, something that happens almost immediately. We often use this expression when we are talking about something we would do or something we would say yes to because we really want that to happen. I would move to Paris in a heartbeat if someone gave me a job there. If a beautiful woman walks up to a young unmarried man and asks him for his phone number, he would give it to her in a heartbeat. Perhaps even some married men would give her their telephone number, but of course they shouldn't. In a second, S-C-O-N-D, means something similar, although it doesn't have the same idea as in a heartbeat related to willingness to do something. I'll be with you in a second means I will be with you in a very short amount of time. There are 60 seconds in 1 minute. Usually, however, when we say in a second, we don't literally mean 1/60th of a minute. We mean in a very short amount of time. Not 10 minutes, not an hour, but not 1/60th of a minute either. In a moment is similar to in a second. It means very soon, very quickly. I'm going to leave in a moment. In a moment, I suppose, might be used when the amount of time is a little longer than when we might use the expression in a second. I'm not sure about that. I guess for me, if someone said, I'll be with you in a moment, I would assume the person was going to take maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes, maybe less. In a second implies or gives me the idea the person will be with me in 20 seconds or perhaps a minute or two, but not 10 minutes or 20 minutes. In a moment and in a second can be used in lots of different situations, regardless of whether you want something to happen or not. In a heartbeat, however, is usually used when you are talking about a situation in which the person really wants to do something and will take the opportunity to do it if it is given to him. Marcos, M-A-R-C-O-S, in Brazil, wants to know the meaning between old and stale, S-T-A-L-E. The more common of these two words is old and can be used in lots of different circumstances. Old is something that has been around for a long time. Of course, it depends on the situation, what you mean by old. If you're 10 years old, someone who is 25 years old is old, right? It seems as though that person is much, much older than the 10-year-old, at least in the eyes of the 10-year-old. When you're in your 50s, someone who's 25 is, of course, considered quite young. So old depends on the situation. The word stale is used usually to talk about food that is old, especially something like bread. Stale bread is bread that is a few days old and is perhaps already become hard. The other use of the word stale you might hear is to mean the opposite of clean or clear, especially when we're talking about the air. If you walk into a house whose windows have not been opened for a long time, you might say it's stale in here. You need fresh air. So stale, in that case, is the opposite of fresh. If you open a window, you will get fresh air into the house. I'll mention one other meaning of stale. It's not nearly as common, but you might hear it when someone is talking about a story or perhaps a joke that is not original, that is old, that is not very entertaining. A person might describe that story or that joke as being stale. There it has more the meaning of old. Finally, Majid, M-A-J-I-D, from Iran, wants to know the meaning of the phrase to deal, D-E-A-L, with it, or simply deal with it. To deal with something is to handle something, to take care of it, to perhaps solve a problem that you are having. However, the expression deal with it by itself is usually used when you are telling someone that even though he doesn't like a situation or like what you are doing, he has to accept it. He has to continue doing what he's supposed to do, even if he doesn't like it. So you may be told by your boss at work that you have to work all weekend in order to finish a project. You may not like it. You may complain. You may say, no, I don't want to do this. But your boss may say, somewhat informally, that's too bad. Deal with it. You have to accept it, even if you don't like it. A few years ago, when this expression was perhaps even more popular than it is now, Some people would say simply deal, meaning deal with it as a shortened version of it. I don't know, maybe that was just me and my friends who would use it that way. In any case, that's what deal with it means. If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on the English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. This podcast is copyright 2016 by the Center for Educational Development.